From the insurrection in the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021, to block the certification of the presidential election results to the October 28 attack on U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's home. These incidents are among the most high-profile instances of political violence in America in recent times. Now, many believe the problem has gone from bad to worse in recent weeks. Harassment of political candidates and voter intimidation have been reported in many parts of the country, prompting some local authorities to elevate vigilance on Election Day. Also, threats against members of Congress are up tenfold. According to Capitol Police, more than 9,600 threats against members of Congress were recorded last year. Threats against federal judges have sparked 400% in the past 6 years to more than 4,200 in 2021. Also, election poll workers have received hundreds of violent threats, leading many to resign from their positions and discouraging others from volunteering in first place. Analysts believe the current trend of increased threats to lawmakers and election officials, extremist candidates running for office, disinformation and heated rhetoric are raising the risk of domestic terrorism and other forms of extreme violence in the United States. That's why a new survey suggests that almost 1 in 5 Americans agree that violence is sometimes needed to protect democracy when elected leaders will not. Therefore, U.S. politics is now in danger of spilling over into street violence. As an answer to unwanted results, nearly 9 in 10 Americans are concerned that political divisions have intensified to the point that there is a risk of politically motivated violence in the United States, and the 2022 midterm elections could act as a catalyst for future domestic extremist violence in the U.S. U.S. President Joe Biden has sounded the alarm over threats to democracy in his closing arguments ahead of the midterm elections.
Democracy is on the ballot. Political violence and intimidation are on the rise all across America. And you remember January 6th, the angry mob that stormed the U.S. Capitol, attacked law enforcement, hunted down elected officials, erected gallows to hang Vice President Pence. Well, West's opponent, supported that mob. Who the hell do they think they are?
Biden has called on Americans to accept the election results and avoid resorting to violence. Also, former U.S. President Donald Trump said he's expecting a Republican victory in the elections. Trump has also vowed to make a big announcement next week, hinting that he's going to run for the 2024 presidential election.
This is the year we're going to take back the House, we're going to take back the Senate, and we're going to take back America. And in 2024, most importantly, we are going to take back our magnificent White House. I'm going to be making a very big announcement on Tuesday, November 15th, at Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach, Florida.
The 2022 midterm elections are the first vote since the January 6th Capitol riot. Democrats have been campaigning around what they call the threat a Republican win would pose to U.S. democracy. Republicans, however, have focused their campaign on such issues as soaring inflation and the scale of violent crimes. Dozens of Republican candidates who could be elected as governors or elected administrators in key states have also echoed Trump's claims of fraud in his 2020 presidential election defeat. Election forecasters predicted that Republicans are likely to pick up roughly 25 seats in the 435-seat House of Representatives, more than enough to win a majority. From the insurrection in the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021, to block the certification of the presidential election results to the October 28 attack on U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's home. These incidents are among the most high-profile instances of political violence in America in recent times. Now, many believe the problem has gone from bad to worse in recent weeks. Harassment of political candidates and voter intimidation have been reported in many parts of the country, prompting some local authorities to elevate vigilance on Election Day. Also, threats against members of Congress are up tenfold. According to Capitol Police, more than 9,600 threats against members of Congress were recorded last year. Threats against federal judges have spiked 400% in the past 6 years to more than 4,200 in 2021. Also, election poll workers have received hundreds of violent threats, leading many to resign from their positions and discouraging others from volunteering in first place. Analysts believe the current trend of increased threats to lawmakers and election officials, extremist candidates running for office, disinformation and heated rhetoric are raising the risk of domestic terrorism and other forms of extreme violence in the United States. That's why a new survey suggests that almost 1 in 5 Americans agree that violence is sometimes needed to protect democracy when elected leaders will not. Therefore, U.S. politics is now in danger of spilling over into street violence. As an answer to unwanted results, nearly 9 in 10 Americans are concerned that political divisions have intensified to the point that there is a risk of politically motivated violence in the United States, and the 2022 midterm elections could act as a catalyst for future domestic extremist violence in the U.S. U.S. President Joe Biden has sounded the alarm over threats to democracy in his closing arguments ahead of the midterm elections.
Democracy is on the ballot. Political violence and intimidation are on the rise all across America. And you remember January 6th, the angry mob that stormed the U.S. Capitol, attacked law enforcement, hunted down elected officials, erected gallows to hang Vice President Pence. Well, West's opponent supported that mob. Who the hell do they think they are?
Biden has called on Americans to accept the election results and avoid resorting to violence. Also, former U.S. President Donald Trump said he's expecting a Republican victory in the elections. Trump has also vowed to make a big announcement next week, hinting that he's going to run for the 2024 presidential election.
This is the year we're going to take back the House, we're going to take back the Senate, and we're going to take back America. And in 2024, most importantly, we are going to take back our magnificent White House. I'm going to be making a very big announcement on Tuesday, November 15th, at Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach, Florida.
The 2022 midterm elections are the first vote since the January 6th Capitol riot. Democrats have been campaigning around what they call the threat a Republican win would pose to U.S. democracy. Republicans, however, have focused their campaign on such issues as soaring inflation and the scale of violent crimes. Dozens of Republican candidates who could be elected as governors or elected administrators in key states have also echoed Trump's claims of fraud in his 2020 presidential election defeat. Election forecasters predicted that Republicans are likely to pick up roughly 25 seats in the 435-seat House of Representatives, more than enough to win a majority.
UN's Climate Change Summit, Secretary General Antonio Guterres responded to a UN report released on Sunday by saying that the planet is sending a distress signal.
Greenhouse gas emissions are now on course to rise by 10%. And meanwhile, temperatures are on course to rise by as much as 2.8 degrees with the present policies in place by the end of the century. And that means our planet is on course for reaching tipping points and that will make climate chaos irreversible and forever bake in catastrophic temperature rise. We need to move from tipping points to turning points for hope.
The report had indicated that the past 8 years are said to have had the warmest climates to ever be recorded. The report had also indicated that global temperatures have risen by 1.15 degrees Celsius since the pre-industrial era, catastrophically accelerating rise in sea levels, glacier mass loss, and unprecedented heat waves. World leaders are discussing solutions in Sharm el-Sheikh's Red Sea Resort in Egypt, while the event is hosted by the Egyptian foreign minister, who emphasized on the magnitude of the challenge that now faces the world. The outgoing chair of the talks and British official Alok Sharma mentioned some political reasons as one of the major causes for the impediment of global efforts concerning the environment, specifically the Ukraine war.
War in Ukraine has precipitated multiple global crises: energy and food insecurity, inflationary pressures, and spiraling debt. And these crises have compounded existing climate vulnerabilities and the scarring effects of the pandemic.
But then he went back on the topic of actual climate catastrophes and pointed out the devastating Pakistan and Nigeria floods, as well as unprecedented droughts in Europe, China, and the US. Speaking of, US President Joe Biden is expected to attend the event later in the week. He's usually enthusiastic about climate events. After all, it was Biden who got the US back into the Paris Climate Accord after Trump pulled out of it. But apparently, neither his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping nor Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi are expected to attend, with China and India being among the biggest polluters of the world. Their absence has cast much doubt over the effectiveness of any potential deal planned to cut emissions during the summit. The treaty was adopted in 2015 between 196 parties, including the EU, at the UN Climate Change Conference near Paris. It demands a 50% cut in global emissions until the year of 2030 to keep the temperature rises to well below 2 degrees Celsius, preferably below 1.5. The eventual goal is to reach net zero emissions by the middle of the 21st century. The treaty has determined an aggregate contribution for each country in terms of how much they need to cut down on their emissions. The UK is one of the signatories to the accord, and their share of emissions reductions by 2030 is said to be on the higher end of the spectrum. They are expected to cut down on their emissions by 68% by 2030, compared to UK's emissions in 1990. There have been plans set in motion, but in a document presented by the Secretary of State for Business, Energy and Industrial Energy to the Parliament, the war in Ukraine is mentioned as the reason that prompted the UK Prime Minister to do a, quote, independent review of the government's approach to meeting its net zero 2050 target. That independent review turned into a rather counterproductive decision. The UK has reversed its fracking ban as a result of the energy crisis it is currently going through. Fracking, short for hydraulic fracturing, is a process that involves injecting water, chemicals, and sand into the cracks of the earth at high pressure to widen the cracks and allow for extraction of oil and gas, in the case of the UK, only gas, from shale formations. The ban was introduced in 2019 when an earthquake occurred near Britain's only remaining fracking site. Fracking sites are known to release various forms of toxins and pollutants into the air, including chemicals that can cause severe headaches, asthma symptoms, childhood leukemia, cardiac problems, and even birth defects. Among the 1,000-plus chemicals used in fracking, some are even known to cause cancer. But those were only the negative effects of fracking on humans. For the environment, the vast amount of wastewater and greenhouse gases released, such as methane, will cause irreversible harm. The US isn't hit as hard as the EU as a result of the war in Ukraine, so their arms sales that will in effect prolong the war might even have a net positive effect for the country. But the EU that is hurting the most from the war is getting the short end of the stick. They are scrambling for other means of energy procurement, and the US might just be their last resort. A US that has increased its price of gas for an increasingly desperate Europe, in dire need of energy, waiting for a difficult winter.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. all produced by IRIB English Radio.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we're going to be looking at a question that kind of gets asked. That is regarding the utensils that we use to eat. As you know, Islam is a perfect religion. It has rules for everything. A lot of the foundation for Islamic manners and behavior is the sunnah and the behavior, the words, even the silence of the infallible imams and the Holy Prophet. In the context of this general rule, we ask whether, is there anything specific that has been mentioned regarding these utensils? You know, today everybody uses forks, plates, spoons to eat. Is there something about this in the Quran and Hadith or not? And if there is, what should these utensils be made out of? Iron, wood, you know, what? In order to answer this question, we can say that from a purely jurisprudential and fiqhi point of view, it's okay to eat in any kind of utensil, except when the utensil is made of gold or silver. Right, this is something which has been specifically prohibited. But other than that, as long as the utensils are clean, ritually pure, tahir, there's no problem in eating from them. Right, there is a certain reports that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam used a wooden utensil to eat. At the same time, there's nothing that would indicate that using a specific type of material to construct the utensil from which we eat is better or not. So this hadith has been transmitted by Tabarsi, the famous historian, in his book Makarim al-Akhlaq, page 31. But that doesn't indicate that it's, you know, something recommended or prohibited or anything like that. Its permissibility can be derived from this hadith, but not necessarily its recommendation or the fact that it's better. This is the answer to this question. We should also like to, kind of add that a lot of, you know, so it's a habit of a lot of people in Islamic countries, to eat with their hands. Like, for example, instead of using fork or spoon, a lot of Muslims, a lot of Muslims, they eat with their hands, you know, like, for example, in the South Asian countries, a lot of Muslims, they eat with their hands, and this is something, they consider it good. And, you know, a lot of people say that this is something that, you know, it helps in the digestion of the food. And, you know, it also adds to the, you know, the tastiness of the food. This is okay. There's nothing wrong with that, provided that, you know, the hands are clean. You know, washing the hands before eating is something recommended. The hands are ritually pure. They're tahir, and you know, there's no ritual impurement on the hands. There's something wrong with this. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the use of utensils in the consumption of food. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
In the limelight.
And the U.S. Democrat Mark Kelly of Arizona held on to his U.S. Senate seat, defeating Blake Masters, who was backed by former President Donald Trump in the key swing state. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The website of ABC News has covered this story. Senator Mark Kelly is projected to win re-election, securing a full six-year term to the Senate after pitching himself as an independent-minded candidate with bipartisan success and casting his opponent, Republican Blake Masters, backed by former President Donald Trump, as too extreme for Arizona. Democrats are closer to maintaining their slim majority in the U.S. Senate since the junior senator held his seat. "Thank you to the people of Arizona for re-electing me to the United States Senate," Mark Kelly said in a release on Friday, 11th of November 2022, after a large drop of votes from Maricopa County in his favor. "From day one, this campaign has been about the many Arizonans, Democrats, independents, and Republicans who believe in working together to tackle the significant challenges we face. That's exactly what I've done in my first 2 years in office and what I will continue to do for as long as I'm there." Mark Kelly, a former NASA astronaut and Navy combat pilot who is married to former Representative Gabby Giffords, ran a well-funded campaign with nearly $80 million fundraised to Blake Masters' $12 million. In a tranche of television advertisements, Kelly told Arizonans he'd focused on job creation, protecting abortion rights and securing the southern border with Mexico, supporting barriers on the southern border when appropriate. He said he stands up to President Joe Biden and Democrats when they're wrong. Blake Masters, a 36-year-old venture capitalist from Tucson, Arizona, backed by Donald Trump and technology billionaire Peter Thiel, went after Mark Kelly on loyalty to Biden, record-high border crossings, fentanyl deaths, and inflation. Mark Kelly, meanwhile, used Blake Masters' words from the primary trail against him, arguing he would support a federal abortion ban, privatizing Social Security, and spread baseless doubts about American elections, since he has alleged without evidence that the 2020 presidential election was corrupt. Mark Kelly also argued that Blake Masters would be beholden to Donald Trump, who Arizonans rejected in 2020, although by the slimmest of margins. In the final days of Kelly's campaign, he included in his stump speech a mention of a phone call that Donald Trump made to Blake Masters after their Senate debate, when Trump told him he should have gone harder on the rigged election conspiracy theory. With Trump's endorsement in June, Blake Masters had beat out five other Republican candidates in the August primary, but after swinging far right to stand out in the bunch, he faced criticism for an apparent pivot, including scrubbing his website to soften stances on key issues. Masters told supporters on Thursday that he would come back and win, but seemed disappointed with vote drops as early as election night, seeing as he didn't take the stage before supporters once. Arizonans ultimately stuck to the incumbent, Mark Kelly. No matter how the rest of the results shake out, our government will remain closely divided with a lot more to do. That can feel daunting, but that's democracy, Kelly said on Tuesday at a watch party in Tucson, Arizona. He added, the way to solve these problems isn't by pointing fingers and dividing people, it's by listening and finding common ground. The website of CNBC has more for us. Democratic Senator Mark Kelly will hold on to his U.S. Senate seat in Arizona, pushing Democrats closer to retaining control of the Senate, NBC News has projected. Mark Kelly was leading Republican candidate Blake Masters, who was former President Donald Trump's pick, in the key swing state by almost 6 percentage points, with 85% of the votes in as of Friday night, 11th of November. With Kelly's win, Democrats need just one of the two seats in Nevada or Georgia that haven't been called yet. In Nevada, Republican candidate Adam Laxalt was ahead by 1 percentage point with 88% of the votes counted as of Friday morning. Georgia's Senate race is headed to a runoff election on 6th of December between Republican candidate Herschel Walker and incumbent Senator Raphael Warnock, who was leading by more than a percentage point. Kelly raised and spent vastly more than venture capitalist Masters, bringing in over $81 million and spending over $75.9 million through to mid-October. Blake Masters, by comparison, raised $12.3 million and spent just $9.7 million over the same time frame, according to data by the Federal Election Commission. The Arizona Democrat campaigned on a platform of bipartisanship and promoted his willingness to work across the aisle with Republicans. He was elected to the Senate in 2020 to finish the term of Republican Senator John McCain, who died of brain cancer. Kelly recently distanced his stance on immigration from the Biden administration when he came out against the decision to end Title 42. The policy, which began during the Trump administration, prevented migrants from entering the country due to the COVID pandemic. The Arizona Democrat has also pushed hard for border security. He recently referred to the influx of migrants at the southern border with Mexico as a mess during a debate. When President Biden decided he was going to do something dumb on this and change the rules that would create a bigger crisis, I told him he was wrong. So I pushed back on this administration multiple times, Kelly said back in October. But Kelly was also a chief negotiator in the CHIPS and Science Act, a key component of President Biden's economic policies that was signed into law back in August. A former NASA astronaut and Navy pilot, Mark Kelly is married to former U.S. Representative Gabrielle Giffords, who survived a gunshot wound to the head in 2011. The website of TheHill.com has also covered this story. Senator Mark Kelly is projected to win re-election to the Senate, defeating Republican Blake Masters in one of the preeminent battleground contests on the midterm map this year and putting Democrats one step closer to securing their majority. Mark Kelly is completing the final 2 years of the late Senator John McCain's term, held a steady lead over Blake Masters, a protege of PayPal founder Peter Thiel, since the early August primary, though his lead slimmed in the final weeks of the campaign. His ultimate victory is a key hold for Democrats as they await the result of Senate races in Nevada, which is undergoing a similar drawn-out counting process, and also in Georgia, which has gone to a December 6 runoff. It also marks a defeat of one of the most closely watched candidates elevated by former President Donald Trump.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, pleasure and perfection. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome everyone, you're listening to A to Z program. I'm your host Hossein Hinzano, and in today's lesson we are talking about pleasure and perfection. Now, man's true perfection is the ultimate existential degree and the most sublime perfection which man is able to reach. All other perfections are like preliminaries and are organic or relative. The being preliminary perfections hinges on the effect in making man reach his true perfection, even though the latter might be of various degrees. As a consequence, true perfection is man's genuine desire, and the desirability of other objects is minor and depends on their involvement in reaching true perfection. Likewise, the pleasure desired by man is one derived from reaching true perfection. Other pleasures are like, you know, preliminary steps, because as already pointed out, genuine pleasure is derived from fulfilling a genuine desire. Now, consequently, recognition of true perfection depends on the recognition of genuine pleasure. Conversely, recognition of genuine pleasure hinges on recognition of true perfection. As genuine pleasure provides the greatest pleasure possible, and recognition of genuine pleasure is accompanied by recognition of something which can provide man with the greatest and the most sublime and the most enduring of all pleasures. For this reason, if we get to know the most pleasurable beings, we will also recognize the genuine pleasure and the true perfection.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. We were talking about pleasure and perfection. And we are saying that no matter how a man tries in his life, so long as he lives in this world, he is always after such of perfection. He wants to be complete. He wants to be perfect. And one of his ways to do this is for him to search for ways of pleasuring himself. He needs pleasures to come towards his side, always after the pleasures. And he is also always against the pains and the agonies of life. He's trying so hard not to meet pain. He's trying so hard not to meet any kind of agony. Thus, it is befitting to ponder over the reality of pleasure and the reason behind differences in its degrees. It has different degrees. A pleasure can be one-sided. A pleasure can be this amount, like let's say a pleasure can be 20% in this particular season and goes up to 40% in the other season just with the same thing. So it differs in degrees. Now, so that we could recognize the most sublime and the most enduring pleasures of man. Now, what the man is experiencing within himself and is interpreting as pleasure is a conceptual state overcoming him when he reaches a desired objective. Provided that he considers that objective as desirable and that we beware of it and pay heed upon reaching it. He is always after reaching it. He is always after gaining that extra perfection, extra need of having to be perfect, of having to be complete, And he is always after that by doing what? By pulling all the pleasures towards his side and siding himself away, keeping himself far from any type of pain and agony. Thank you so much for following up on this program. Until next episode, we'll meet again, inshallah. Fi amanillah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
While the U.S. regime accuses other countries of vote rigging, this regime itself has the most undemocratic and unhealthy election in the world. The influence played by a handful of billionaires in the midterms is a clear evidence to this fact. In this regard, we have provided different media views on this issue. Stay tuned for more. A huge amount of dark money now funds both super PACs and also more generally political interest groups. Earlier this year, the New York Times and ProPublica reported that 90-year-old Barr Seed, a secretive Chicago manufacturing tycoon, had donated $1.6 billion to the Marble Freedom Trust to push its agenda of securing conservative judicial appointments up and down the ranks of state and federal judiciary. This is a long-term investment that over the coming years and decades will buttress conservatives as they groom the next generation of right-wing legal scholars and work to ensure the election of political who will nominate ever more right-wing figures to judicial benches. That money, the largest one-off political donation in U.S. history, instantly made Seed hardly a household figure in U.S. public life, one of the country's most important arbiters determining the fate of the legal system, and by extension, the country's regulatory edifice, its environmental policies, access to rights, voting rights, the fate of gun control laws, civil rights, and so much more over the coming decades. And it catapulted him into the top tier of politically active billionaires, joining a club that includes Charles Koch on the right, George Soros on the left, and a handful of others. But modern U.S. billionaires don't confine themselves to setting up or funding think tanks and other organizations intended to shape the public debate on key issues. It has now been 12 years since the Citizens United Supreme Court ruling opened the floodgates to corporate donations and super PAC monies coming into elections. And as a result, each election cycle since then has seen the growing consequences of this decision, as the super wealthy use their money to prop up pet candidates and determine crucial citizens' initiatives. In 2022, billionaire plutocrats, the U.S. equivalent of oligarchy, poured vast amounts of money into political races. Americans for Tax Fairness, ATF, recently released a report which calculated that through the end of September, 445 billionaires had collectively donated close to $900 million to political candidates this election season. Among these, a handful, a mere 20, according to the report, made up the bulk of these contributions, between them donating more than $600 million. By the time the election was held on November 8, ATF estimated the total donations made by U.S. billionaires would top $1 billion. Indeed, in late October, the Washington Post calculated that the top 50 political donors had injected $1.1 billion into political races this expensive election season. Percent of these donations went to Republican Party candidates, although liberal billionaires George Soros and Michael Bloomberg also pumped huge sums into the elections, with the intent of shoring up Democratic congressional representation and pushing back against some of the anti-democracy forces coursing through the body politic these days. Sam Bankman-Fried, the young cryptocurrency guru, also donated tens of millions of dollars to pro-democratic PACs, presumably before his business empire suddenly crumbled in the first part of November. In 2022, largely out of the public eye, billionaire PayPal founder Peter Thiel bankrolled candidates like Arizona Senate hopeful Blake Masters and J.D. Vance, the newly elected senator from Ohio, to the tune of tens of millions of dollars. Building supply magnate Diane Hendricks spent $16 million propping up Ron Johnson's campaign for re-election as senator from Wisconsin, according to ATF data. The intervention was probably critical to sustaining the unpopular Johnson, arguably Donald Trump's most vocal apologist in the Senate, in the last weeks of the campaign, as his Democratic opponent Mandela Barnes surged to within a point of victory in the election. Hendricks' donations came up on top of more than $20 million that she and fellow billionaires Dick and Liz Ollehane donated to Johnson's campaign in 2016. What did these billionaires get from their investment? A pliant senator willing to use his public office to push for amendments to tax legislation that would save his billionaire patrons hundreds of millions of dollars in reduced taxes. In New York, Ronald Lauder of the Estee Lauder Cosmetics fortune spent $11 million boosting GOP gubernatorial candidate Lee Zeldin in his race against Democratic incumbent Kathy Hochul. The money didn't ultimately swing the election to Zeldin, but it did contribute to significantly narrowing the gap between the two candidates, and likely was influential in bringing out enough GOP voters to flip a critical number of states' congressional seats from the blue to red, results that might produce the margin of victory nationally for the GOP to regain control of the House of Representatives. In Los Angeles, mayoral hopeful Rick Caruso, a billionaire mall developer, has spent roughly $100 million of his own money in an advertising blitz that's eclipsed by a factor of roughly 13 to 1 Karen Bass's spending in the last month of the campaign and turned him into a viable candidate for taking the reins in City Hall. As of this writing, with slightly less than half the votes counted, Caruso has a 2% lead over Bass. The money injected into the political process by the super wealthy is just the tip of the corporate influence iceberg created by the Citizens United decision and told between super wealthy donors, corporations, and smaller donations. Nearly $17 billion was spent on the 2022 midterm elections, according to an analysis by Open Secrets. In the five most contested Senate races alone, $1.3 billion was burned through. No other country on earth spends anywhere near as much during its election season. The disproportionate influence played by a handful of billionaires and by OPEC outside spending groups on the country's political system isn't healthy for democracy. Yes, the country dodged a bullet in the recent election by rejecting election deniers who sought to capture critical state offices in order to undermine the integrity of election systems.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Faith through action. Sunday, the 5th of Ramadan, 1394, the 22nd of September, 1974. There are a handful of other verses at the end of Surah Anfal which restate the duties associated with faith mentioned here, such as prayer, zakat, holding fast to Allah. It also mentions some duties associated with faith from another perspective. Let us turn to these now. Indeed, those who have believed and migrated and struggled with their possessions and their persons, and against their possessions and their persons, and those who gave them shelter when they were refugees without a home, and helped They are guardians of one another. They are bound together and on the same side. They are of a single substance. They are the bricks and mortar of a single structure.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The likeness of the faithful is like an edifice. They support one another. Have you seen how these bricks go together in these ornate ceilings? Each brick is a single believer. Each believer is a single brick. They fit together and support one another. Together they form a structure that takes great effort to demolish. Tens of bricks side by side. This one brick helps to protect the whole, and the whole all help to protect this one brick. They are guardians of one another. Held together by strong bonds, united. And those who have believed, the Quran, Surah 8, verse 72. Pay attention here. What about those who have believed, who have faith in their hearts, but did not migrate? They believed, but they didn't act on the moral duties that arise from their faith. What about them? You have no guardianship, wilaya, in relation to them until they migrate. These are not bound to you. They are not a part of you. There is no relationship or guardianship between the two of you. Until when? Until they migrate. Until they follow through on the moral duties to which faith is attached. Hollowed out faith is no use in this world, dear brother. It does not produce any effects on the Islamic society. As for the hereafter, this is a separate discussion. You have no guardianship in relation to them until they migrate. There is another verse which is very relevant to what we are discussing here, and it comes just a few verses after those we have been discussing. Allah says, those who have believed, migrated, and struggled in the way of Allah, and those who gave them shelter and helped, it is they who are the truly faithful. The Quran, Surah 8, verse 74. So, if those who emigrate, struggle, give shelter, and help are the truly faithful, what are everyone else? They are false believers.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You've guided me from all the ways that were wrong. I want to thank you for bringing me home.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
The EU's executive arm, the European Commission, suggests the bloc's economy will have contracted for a six-month period up to the end of March 2023. This means recession. Inflation is forecast to stay high for longer than initially anticipated. Uncertainty surrounds the medium to long-term picture also.
The largest threat comes from adverse developments on the gas market and the risk of shortages, especially not this winter but next winter.
As EU energy sanctions against Russia appear to backfire, business and consumer confidence continues to decline across the 27-country bloc.
We're very concerned, particularly for people that are on lower incomes that are very much affected by the higher energy prices.
I'm afraid that it can get much worse before it gets better.
The price of the energy is so high. The price of the products, I think it's a thing of everything.
EU leaders firmly blame Moscow for the crisis amid the conflict in Ukraine. However, some commentators claim the United States has used NATO to manufacture the war.
America is fighting against multilateral world, but basically is fighting against our freedoms, democracy, and everything it pretends it stands for.
The EU says it will continue to fund the Ukrainian army and government no matter what the cost. Back home, the only good news is that employment figures remain positive. Just modest damage to the EU labour market is forecast for 2023. It is an area that is being monitored very closely by the Commission, as there's broad consensus. A sharp rise in unemployment would represent the final nail in the coffin for the EU economy. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Music.
diplomatic tension between Italy and France keeps mounting as the French NGO-run search and rescue ship Ocean Viking reached the French port of Toulon with its load of 234 asylum seekers on Friday. The ship had been refused a port of safety by Italy's far-right government for around 3 weeks, a decision that the French government slammed as irresponsible and inhumane. In response to the situation, Paris suspended plans to take in 3,500 refugees currently in Italy, calling on all the countries in the EU's migrant relocation mechanism to adopt similar measures.
È la prima nave.
The Ocean Viking NGO ship that docks in France today is the first NGO ship to have ever docked in France, and it has 234 migrants. This generated a very tough reaction with respect to Italy, which has allowed almost 90,000 immigrants to enter since the start of the year. 90,000! All NGO ships dock in Italy. What makes us angry? That Italy has to be the only country to provide a disembarkation port. This is not written in any agreement. France's response was aggressive and unjustified.
A third of the 234 asylum seekers on board the NGO ship will be relocated in France, while four passengers with serious health difficulties were transferred to a French hospital. This is not the first diplomatic rift between Italy and France in recent years. In 2019, Paris recalled its ambassador to Rome for consultations after then Foreign Minister Luigi Di Maio urged members of the Yellow Vest movement to continue with a protest against the French government.
There is a clear resemblance between the rift that took place in 2019 and the present one. Both cases are just a mere provocation on the part of nationalist, populist Italian executives. This tension between Italy and France is the result of the insubstantiality of the EU's migration policy.
While EU countries keep failing to collectively assume responsibility on the migrant issue, around 20,000 asylum seekers have died trying to cross the Mediterranean Sea since 2014, while tens of thousands are stuck in Libyan detention centres where torture, sexual violence and abuse are rife. Max Civili, Rome.
Walthamstow, a town in East London, home to more than 150,000 people and the longest outdoor market in Europe.
It also happens to be one of the poorest areas, where a national cost of living crisis is pushing more and more people to the brink. And less money in people's pockets has meant less business for the shops and stalls here.
Couple that with soaring utility bills and increased prices that make running a successful business a real challenge.
My weekly sale is like half and half now, this time especially. For example, I'm earning about a weekly 1,000. For example, it's go 5. It's half and half now. And the people are scary, they don't spend much. They are very choosy now.
Quiet, very quiet. We see the market empty. Because we have people, but like pass, just on the pass. Nobody do shop because they don't have money. But rent now high. But energy right now very, very high. Gas high. And because that expensive right now.
The cost of living crisis has fed into the housing market as well, forcing Anne, who works in a coffee shop, to move house.
A couple of months ago, I was living in a house share, but the landlord got really, like, worried about the cost of living, and he, like, tried so hard to, like, increase the prices little by little, and we ended up, like, having an argument about it, and he ended up, like, evicting me because, like, I didn't think it was fair, but he was forcing us to do stuff. So now, like, I'm paying, like, a really high price for, like, such a small room, no, like, living room or anything.
More than 6,000 people in this area claim universal credit. Recent surveys have found that nearly half of the children here live in poverty. Desperate parents and households are having to rely on charities such as this one to get by. We were told the Roxana Khan Foundation Food Bank gives donations to an increasing 300 households every week. Inflation remains stubbornly in the double digits, and the government has hinted at increased taxes and cuts to public spending. Many here and across the UK will find it even more difficult to make ends meet. Saeed Puriza, Walthamstow, East London.